Welcome to TA1. Everything you want to know about adventure racing and then some, unless it's the world championships, because I don't know nothing about that stuff. I'm your host, legendary Randy Erickson. And, two expedition adventure race world championships. Yeah, that'll be confusing. So, this episode is adventure racing. Next week, I talked to Nathan, and he had some interesting things to say about A1, which really made some sense, some of the things they're doing. So, but I don't know about two world championships. But that's just me, and what do I know? Because I'm not even a racer. I'm just a watcher. So, we're going to Croatia this week. Great track chat with Chris and about the race there and what's happening in the other parts of the real world. But really, a lot of race talk. So this should be a good one. So, let's get it on. Slow is fast. Keep an eye out for checkpoints, hitch marks. Have fun, and thanks for listening. Bye.
Hey, hey, hey.
Hey, Chris.
How's it going?
Oh, pretty good. I think we might actually be summertime here finally. So.
Yeah, it's kind of how we felt around here before we left for Croatia. It was a long spring, and it felt like a long winter with a short spring, and now we get back and it feels like summer's around the corner. So I was just thinking, I think it's been a while. I mean, for a while it seemed like I was seeing you pretty regularly, but now it's been a couple years.
That little thing got in the way.
Oh, it went from little to big pretty quickly, eh?
I don't know. Does it feel like it's getting back to normal in Canada?
I mean, parts of it, yeah. I mean, I would say, business-wise, things seem to be, getting closer to normal. A lot of people are still working from home, and, going into the office maybe 1-2 days a week. I think some companies are going to continue to do that, for the foreseeable future. And then, other companies, it seems like, they figure it's better to have all hands on board and everyone's in. But, coming back a couple of days ago where we noticed that, like, the airport is just terrible. And we heard rumors about it a couple of weeks ago, and we're like, I'm sure it'll be cleared up by the time we get in there. And it was chaos. And it was like, we were thinking, like, is it a short staffing issue? Is it because so many more people are traveling in the last little bit? But I think it's a combination of everything. And as much as I want people to come up to Toronto and visit, I'm thinking, I don't know if it's a good time right now, so hopefully they figure that out.
I agree, it's a little bit. I had to get my name changed on all the airlines, because you got to have the your government name has to be on your tickets now.
Oh, okay.
And especially for your TSA and stuff, it American and United took about a week. Delta took like 3 months. And I was talking to a gal at the airport one day when I had a layover. She said, they laid everybody off, and now they can't get anybody to come back.
Right.
So I think that's a big, big chunk of it. So, yeah.
And you were supposed to be traveling in the next couple of weeks, were you? And then did they get canceled or?
Yeah, I was supposed to go to, I was supposed to be up in, almost by you, up in, Western New York, Watkins Glen.
Okay.
For a sports car race. And then, so the team I work for, they rent seats in the race car. So people just show up and drive. Well, 4 of the drivers canceled a week before.
Oh.
So it's I guess I won't be going.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
You weren't in Bend, were you?
No, because I was supposed to be, our original schedule was supposed to be racing that weekend too. So,
okay.
So originally when the year started, I had like sports car races to do. And they realize that might be a little bit of a stretch to try and do all those.
Right.
So
do you have anything on the schedule right now, or?
Oh yeah. Yeah. All right. Quickly. Next weekend, I go to Wyoming for a gravel race. And I come back here at home for a gravel race. Then I have a week off. Then we have our 100-mile run here. Then I go to Sebring, Florida for a sports car race. And 2 weeks later, I go into Maine for Endless Summer. First part of August, I got like 5 motorcycle races here. Okay. Then I go to Virginia for a 24-hour sports car race. And then end of August, I'm going to Iceland for shoot a 6-day run. Get home on Tuesday and leave on Thursday to go to Ohio for a race.
Oh, wow. Okay. So the fact that travel is not a bad thing. You'll be doing enough.
No, it was kind of funny because when it got canceled, it's like, oh, I'm really bummed. But it's like, you know, I got a lot of other things that are going to be happening. So it's not like when your one big thing of the year gets canceled. Which probably every adventure racer in the world understands that.
Especially if you're racing in Colorado and it gets canceled. So you are going to Rootstock? You'll be at the Endless Mountains for that one?
No, because that's weekend of that. Anyway, something was, I think that's the weekend of our race here, the 100-mile run. And Paulette was going to go to Teton Ogre, so that weekend, so I needed to be home. So we literally have a year at a glance calendar sitting on our, it's been sitting on our kitchen table since January.
Yeah.
Because we have every weekend, because she's traveling for work. It's like, okay, if I travel this weekend, and then she's got, okay, she's going to go do a swim run in Washington. So we literally have the whole year on the calendar. So.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
We can keep it straight.
Well, at least we can start to travel, Grant. I mean, that's the big thing, right?
So. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of nice. I refuse to take my mask off yet, though.
It's one of those things that I find. I mean, once we got back to Canada, there's a lot more masks. When we were over in Europe, you saw a handful of them, but that was it. I mean, the flight from Croatia, from Zagreb to Frankfurt, no one had masks on. The flight from Frankfurt back home, everyone had to have a mask on. So it just, it's just different areas. And, you still had to be fully vaccinated to fly anyways, but just extra caution, right? So.
Well, I mean, how many times you'd come home beforehand and you'd be sick?
Yeah, just exactly. Yeah.
Because you're with 200 people. I'm like, I haven't been sick since the whole thing started, knock wood. So it's like, I'm gonna just keep wearing it for now. And I would say even at home, a good chunk of the time, if I go in the grocery store, I'll put it on. If I'm halfway there and I'm like, oh, I forgot to grab it, I'm probably not going to go back and get it, but I try not to forget it. So
for sure.
It's my karma for all those years of making fun of the Asian tourists that wore masks. It turned out to be way smarter than us.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. It's obvious that they had, a better read on it than what we did.
But, they've been doing it for forever. And it took me a long time to realize that they would do it because they were not feeling good.
Yeah,
they didn't want to get other. So it's like, kudos, kudos. Makes sense. So why Croatia? Just
good. So it's interesting. I mean, in a couple of the races that I've seen you on, Igor, the race director for Croatia, he was participating in, different capacities. I think one of them he was kind of overseeing, and another one he was the referee for. And a couple of times, I saw him on the course, and he, you know, had a chance to kind of tell me about this idea of a race in Croatia that he was planning. And, you know, he says, but the big thing for me is, he says, you know, I don't want people, he goes, it's going to be difficult. No doubt. The terrain is difficult. But the one thing that he kind of left me with, and it kind of stuck in my mind, is that, you know, he wanted a lot more transitions. He wanted shorter legs, you know, still the same kind of distance to cover, but, you know, the idea of kind of switching back and forth and not having these monster 150-kilometer, 200-250-kilometer legs that, you know, in some cases could kind of crush you. And that always had kind of appealed to me. I mean, you know, when I think back at, you know, some of the longer races that I've done in the past couple of years, you know, the recovery time after that, you know, for a guy like me especially, I find that it's a lot more difficult. And, you know, even as the race goes on, you know, those long treks and, you know, 25, 30, 40 kilometers of hike a bike at a time, you know, they just wear on you. And, you know, Igor had kind of said, oh, and, you know, I'll make sure that everything's bikeable. And, you know, so all those things he kind of said to me, I thought, well, and, you know, beautiful part of the world that I've never been to, you know, it definitely had an appeal. So another Canadian team actually had an entry a couple of years ago that they couldn't use. So they had asked if we were interested in taking it, along with the teammate Harper Forbes, who had been registered as well. So we took the entry. Then, of course, COVID happened. And, you know, 2 years later, we were, you know, kind of thinking, well, are we going to do it? You know, I mean, everything that's going on in Europe right now, obviously in Ukraine, you know, we were kind of reluctant to sign. Well, I mean, we'd signed up, but to book anything. So, you know, we reached out to the race directors and, you know, kind of told them our concerns, and, you know, they appreciated the concern, but they also said, you know, if anything escalates, you know, it's going to affect everyone, you know, not just the immediate area. So, you know, we talked to our families and, you know, it was nervous, but also exciting to be able to travel once again, especially a place that, you know, none of us had been. And, you know, the one thing that kind of still resonated was, you know, tough race, but 17 legs, you know, longest leg being, you know, probably less than 100 kilometers. So just a little bit different than those, you know, 10. I remember God Zone, you know, a couple months ago, and there was like a, I think it was 155-kilometer trek, you know, where the initial estimates were 24 hours for the fast teams and 48 for the longer teams, you know, the short or the longest. And I think the fastest team, Avaya, went through in 48 hours or something like that. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, like 48 hours for one trek. I mean, as much as God Zone has always been on a bucket list of mine, I don't know if I can handle that at this point. I mean, I retired a couple of years ago and, you know, now I've cracked it. It's like... So, so anyway, so that's definitely the reason why, you know, it had a big interest to us. And, you know, Igor did a really good job of promoting it. And, you know, they you know, kind of set us up, you know, kind of well going into it. So,
That's cool. Hey, it's interesting, right, that the geopolitical situation in the world affects adventure racing.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
Where's the good old days?
Oh, for sure. Well, and I mean, that was the nice thing about getting a chance to go over there, though, and just kind of talk to everyone about, you know, what they're seeing, what they're understanding. And, you know, I mean, especially this race, I think all but three teams, I could be wrong, but I think out of the 48 that were there, I think three were from outside of Europe. Everyone else, you know, was local to that area. So, you know, they've been dealing with things a little bit more closer to home, I'm sure. And there's one team from South Africa, you know, a team from the US, and then us. So definitely it felt more regional at times.
Does that kind of settle your mind a little bit when you realize all these European teams are there? And, you know, like you said, they're probably more affected, or, you know, the day-to-day stuff for them is, if they feel safe, does it kind of like, well, okay, maybe it's okay?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, especially because, you know, you had teams from so many different countries. I mean, you had a lot of teams from, you know, countries fairly close to the, you know, affected areas right now. And, you know, they're obviously concerned about what's going on. But I think, you know, I think for a lot of people, it just seems like, you know, we still have to try to be able to move forward. And, you know, it's if you keep looking back over your shoulder, we're never going to be able to kind of, you know, push forward. I mean, you know, with the terrible news, what happened yesterday in the U.S. Mm-hmm. and Texas, you know, you just, it seems like, you know, you open the news and it's like, you know, one thing after another.
Yeah.
And I think for anyone who's involved with adventure racing, especially, you know, these multi-day, it's kind of a nice getaway. Just turn off. You don't look at Twitter. You don't look at social media. You don't look at the news. You know, and you're not being ignorant to it, but it's just a good chance to get away from it, because, you know, as soon as you get back, it's like, oh, there's reality again. You know, we obviously we're trying to avoid it, but it's a good distraction for a couple of days. Then again, in the middle of it, it's not an easy distraction, but it's a good one. I think that a lot of people need at this point in time.
Yeah, I think so. I guess that's the one saving grace with the news cycles and all the instant news and stuff is these horrible things happen and then the next one does and you forget the first one. So it'd be really hard if you started to think about all the shit going on at once instead of concentrating on the latest one. And it's like,
100%. And I think, you know, the four of us talked about it on one of our treks, and we said, you know, it's interesting that, you know, your sole focus when you're out there on an expedition race is just kind of one foot in front of the other. You're kind of your survival, right? I mean, and I don't mean to sound dramatic with that, but just like, how are you going to get this leg done and all the other, you know, peripheral stuff that you have to worry about at home, you know, obviously your family and your job and, you know, all the other stresses in life, they're kind of secondary for that short time period.
Yeah.
And I think it's a healthy thing to have to be able to do that just for a short period anyways.
Yeah. I mean, how refreshed are you coming home? Which seems kind of dumb after an adventure race, but I mean, your body's tired, but I mean, are you mentally and just like, I'm good for now for a little bit.
I mean, compared to some of the longer races in the past, I mean, this one, we were on the course for just over 100, I think we're 101 hours. You know, in Norway, we were just under 150. And Cowboy Tough a couple years ago is definitely a little bit longer. So, I mean, this one here, and I think it was just that kind of, you know, quicker transitions, you know, it's not necessarily quick transitions. I shouldn't say more transitions and, you know, less, you know, 20 hour legs or 24 hour legs. So, I mean, the funny thing is, Julie had to fly home, you know, shortly after the race, but, Chad Harper and I had 24 hours or just less than 24 hours in Zagreb. And we were walking around the city, and as we were walking around the city, we noticed a bunch of Iron Maiden shirts. And next thing you know, we're buying tickets to go see Iron Maiden Zagreb. And it was like any other race, I don't think we would have had the, I don't know if it's like that. I just don't think we would have, you know, had the energy to do it. But I know for some reason, you know, even though we were tired and we wanted to get home, you know, we figured why not? And, you know, not like we're Maiden fans, but, you know, we figured, one in Zagreb, why not, right? So
yeah, you got a chance to see Iron Maiden in Croatia. You don't, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool. But I mean, you know, coming home, I took our 2.5-year-old for a nice little hike, just kind of the local ski hill today, just to kind of get the legs going. And I mean, I felt pretty good. I mean, definitely my feet are a little bit sore, but I mean, nothing like what I've experienced before. So, you know, as we age, you know, it's kind of nice to not have that, like, you know, 2-3 week recovery that we're used to sometimes. So,
Does that surprise you a little bit, or when you knew you're going to be doing all those different legs, did you think maybe it wouldn't tear you up quite so much?
Well, I thought, I mean, the one thing that was evident right off the bat, I mean, it was the opposite of what happened in Bend. I mean, we were kind of like, oh man, good thing we're not going to Bend with that, you know, crazy snow. And, you know, it's just completely different than what we expected in Croatia. But I mean, the temperatures, if it didn't get to 30 degrees, it was pretty close. So that was definitely a factor for us poor Canadians that, you know, haven't seen much warm weather yet this year. And then the rocky terrain, I mean, it just, you know, that first trek, we're out there and, you know, we'd like to think that we have some rocks around the Canadian Shield, you know, around Ontario where we live, but nothing like that kind of jagged rock landscape. I mean, there are a couple of times where we commented that it felt like you were stepping on forks, you know, not trying to like fall into these like jagged rock crevices. And, you know, definitely, you know, our feet started to take a toll. But once again, because the legs were a little bit shorter, you know, we had a chance to recover on a bike or recover on the paddle. So I think that definitely helped.
Yeah. So, well, should have asked this earlier, but who did you race with?
Oh, so yeah, so raced with actually the same team that I did Expedition Canada last fall with. So Julie Parent, Chad Spence, and Harper Forbes. So it's our second race in a row together. And then Julie, Chad, and I have, you know, I guess we've raced quite a few in a row together. So Harper's newer addition to our team, but definitely not new to the expedition racing. So yeah, two really good navigators, and that definitely helped where we needed the navigation. Although I will say these races, you know, there's a lot more kind of map and trail following. So it's more about kind of speed on those legs, less about, you know, following compass bearings.
Yeah. Harper is one of my oldest adventure race friends. So.
Yeah. I think he was mentioning a couple times about some, you know, Randy sightings early on. So, yeah. I think we're talking about the coverage of races that him and Chad have done, especially in like Central and South America, and it's pretty vast. So, then Chad finished, and he's got endless mountains in I think 3 or 4 weeks. So he's got a short recovery period, and then a little bit of a taper that he needs.
And I suspect that's going to be a harder than a lot of people think. That terrain in Pennsylvania. It is called Endless Mountains, right?
Exactly. It's you know what? I mean, of any race directors that I love to be able to support, it would be Abby and Brent right now. I think you know, it sounds like, you know, they've done a great job with their races, and it'll be great to hear and to kind of see how this one goes off, especially kind of at the next level stage.
Well, hey. It was good enough to get Chris Radcliffe out of retirement to get there. So to shoot pictures. So
good point.
Yeah. I gave him some grief about that. He waits till I'm not there to show up. So
no doubt.
Anyway. So tell me a little bit about the race. Let's go through that a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, so kind of going into it, you know, we the race was about 3 hours outside of the capital city of Zagreb. We didn't realize that Croatia has, you know, just around 4 million people. So, you know, even though it looks like a good size country on a map, you know, there's not a lot of people living there. So you don't have to go too far to find some kind of more rugged areas. And the headquarters was on the island of Kirk. I'm sure I'm not, you know, pronouncing it right. But there's a beautiful island section, like kind of on the north of the Adriatic, where Igor and Anna had kind of planned this race course. And actually, I think probably about a month before we raced, there was a mountain bike race. I don't know if it was called Epic Islands or something like that. But they raced between the islands. And at the end of the day, they would take a ferry to the next island for the next stage. And we watched some of the footage and it looked pretty epic. We also were on part of the course and we realized how tough it would have been because of those rocks. So the race started with, you know, a couple kind of shorter, you know, legs as far as, you know, on paper. You know, there was a nice bike to start with, a good climb. You know, fairly uneventful leg one, I would say, as far as biking. We definitely, you know, got a good taste of the rocky terrain. The second trek, you know, started kind of early afternoon for us. And it was evident right off the bat that heat would be an issue because, like I said, I mean, I don't think we had any days above, you know, 15 Celsius or, you know, that would be like 60 Fahrenheit or so to train in. And now all of a sudden, you know, we've got kind of like 90 Fahrenheit or, you know, 30 degrees Celsius, if that's the conversion. And, you know, it was beautiful. You know, you got up to the top of this ridge line and you could see, I was convinced I could see Italy on the, you know, the kind of east side Adriatic, maybe not, but you know, it provided some beautiful views. You know, for us, you know, we obviously didn't have, you know, these visions of grandeur of, you know, top podium or anything like that, especially with the field that they had. I think going into it, we just kind of wanted to finish the full course. You know, we've been pretty competitive on local, you know, soil, but those Europeans are completely different breed, especially on those rocky terrains. So, you know, just kind of, you know, help each other out, make sure that everyone's drinking and eating where we need to, kind of typical AR stuff. We had a nice little swim towards the end of the first trek, which, you know, I'm definitely the weakest swimmer of the four of us. So I took off like George Costanza, you know, when he called fire in that Seinfeld episode. As soon as we got in the water, I left my dry bag for everyone else to deal with, and I just started swimming. So I think I got to the other side, like, before they had even gotten in the water. but they're good swimmers, so I don't think they minded that I took off quickly. But that was nice. It was well timed. And then then we came into our first paddle, and the paddle I thought was a beautiful, you know, start to kind of the water leg, if you will. And we just kind of paddled, you know, south, you know, on a portion of the Adriatic around this lighthouse. We had to find a cave. For us, we got there kind of early evening, so the sun had just gone down. That made it a little bit more tricky trying to find a cave on this kind of rocky landscape, but you know, with our good navigation, we managed to find it without too much issue. You know, fairly uneventful, but you know, the water levels or the water temperatures were still, you know, pretty chilly. So by the time we got off, you know, even though it wasn't a long paddle, we were ready to be back on our feet to warm up again. And yeah, I mean, over the course of the next couple legs, we just kind of went back and forth between, you know, paddle, and then we went to a trek, and then a bike, and then back to a trek, and then, you know, then we had another big paddle that we did, and that was kind of the beginning of the end for some teams. I think that the paddle ended up being about 8 kilometers in length, and once again, it was on the Adriatic, so, you know, we had good kayaks, but, you know, at one point, I think we started kind of late. I'm trying to think of when we started that one. It doesn't really matter, but it was funny how quickly the conditions changed. You know, we're trying to find this island in the middle of the dark to kind of stay to the north of it. And we actually almost hit it. And one, you know, it just came up on us out of nowhere. And shortly afterwards, we figured, okay, this is a good time. Take 2 minutes, grab some food. And we looked out on the sea, and it was just flat. You could have had a stand-up paddleboard. You could have, you know, it just looked picture perfect, you know, nice full moon behind us. So we took off, and about 5 minutes later, the swells were insane. Like, it was like night and day. And next thing you know, I'm at the back of our boat with Harper, and, you know, we're trying our best to kind of stay course. Chad's definitely a lot more comfortable in the back with him and Julie. And, you know, he kind of wanted to take a little bit more of a direct bearing, but, you know, for the life of Harper and I, we could not keep it, you know, kind of straight in the waves. I was convinced that there was some sort of a tidal front coming in. So we kind of drifted a bit, but thankfully Chad, you know, was kind of able to stay close. But it's, you know, it's kind of a good wake up call as to, you know, what those conditions can really turn like, and, you know, in the middle of, you know, the sea. So, you know, from there, we kept on paddling. We made a couple stops just to kind of for, you know, a couple minute breaks here and there, because, it, you know, 38 kilometer paddle on the sea can, you know, turn out to be a little bit longer, especially when you've got no other checkpoints.
Yeah.
But I'd say with about 6 kilometers left, it was just, you know, getting a little bit of daylight. And we knew that we had this section where we're going to have to turn right into the wind and heading north across this pretty open channel. And we'd seen a couple boats on the shore. They were probably just either resting before this kind of last, you know, push. And I'll be honest, I mean, we hit it, and I thought to myself, I don't know if I'm comfortable doing this right now. And one of the reasons was I still had PTSD from our race in Kelowna last year, where we dumped early on in the paddle, where we were in the canoe. And I'm sure if anyone remembers the pictures, Julian and Chad, Julie was like out of the water like this, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. riding the waves. Well, we didn't have as much luck as we dumped. So, you know, even though this time around, the kayak was definitely a lot more secure than the canoes. You know, I still had flashbacks of that dumping, right? So thankfully, Chad's a lot more confident out there than, you know, what I am. So him and Julie went ahead just to see if they could make any progress, you know, a couple, you know, maybe about 20 meters. So once they got going, we followed suit. And I swear, it felt like for the first 45 minutes, we went half a kilometer. We were just paddling into the wind and these swells were just going like this. But, you know, what are you going to do? You either turn around and, you know, head back into the, or you just keep pushing. So, I mean, you know, it felt like it was going to take forever. I mean, thankfully, it did kind of calm down a little bit, especially for us, because it sounds like later on it got really nasty. There's boats separating on either shores. And it unfortunately for the race organizers, it became a bit of a problem because they had boats with safety equipment, but the other boat wouldn't. And because they just couldn't stick together because of the waves, they were stranded, you know, 2-3 kilometers apart. So I think they had 3 safety boats trying to, you know, match up teams with their lost teammates. And, you know, we were pretty fortunate to get through that section without, you know, much issue. But I know it caused problems, you know, later on. They ended up having to cancel the third and fourth paddle because of those issues. I think the only team to make it through was the first place Swedish Armed Forces. So, you know, they decided maybe that's best to pull the plug on those.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, you get that many people out there that maybe aren't that comfortable. That's probably a good decision to pull the plug on all that paddling.
And it's interesting. Like when you look at a map, it doesn't look like a big area, but I mean, it's just, it's a little bit different than those smaller lakes, you know, that we might be training on at home and all that. I mean, this is, you know, part of the sea, part of the ocean, right? So you get a couple winds going, you know, the opposite way, and you know, they can wreak havoc on your boat. So I think it was a smart decision on their point. I mean, who knows, maybe the last day that last paddle would have been fine, but it would have been about twice as long heading, you know, kind of west into the finish line. So you know, the only thing for us that kind of stunk and unbeknownst to us is that when they canceled the third paddle, we ended up having to wait for a ferry that we missed by half an hour.
Of course.
So we ended up getting short course because of that. So, I mean, it's one of those, could we have, good chance we could have still stayed on the full course. But you know, what are you going to do? I mean, they did the right thing at the time. So, what that allowed us to do was get a nice long break. It was cold, but, I think it was probably the longest break I've ever had in a race. The next ferry was 6 a.m. the next morning. And, because we missed the 8:30, ferry, I think we got in about 9 o'clock. So we had 9 hours to rent an Airbnb, kick up our feet, have a couple beers. we hunkered down in a cold little parking lot, but the race directors did provide us a little bit of hoodies and clothing just because we had access to no gear and that was an unplanned stop. So it gave us a little bit of rest before the final push.
It happens, right?
Yeah. Oh, 100%. And I know that, and I know it was a difficult decision for the race directors, and I think there were some issues with some of the top teams because of the way it was handled. But I mean, it's a lot of teams that you have to account for out there, and you know, I feel very, you know, sympathetic to the race organizers in those situations because, you know, there's no right answer, right? When you're doing something like that. And especially when Mother Nature is involved.
If they had, 4 or 5 hours to think about it, they could probably come up with a little better solution, but they got 4 or 5 minutes probably that they really need to make decisions. Always err on the side of safety though, right?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, that's it, right? I mean, I think anyone, you know, their families are sitting home watching this and they're thinking, you know, don't, especially later in the race, you know, sleep deprived, you're not making as good of decisions. Yeah. You want to make sure that the race organizers have your best interest too, right? So, for us, coming across that ferry the next morning, it was kind of like a fresh start. You know, we still had a chance to possibly, you know, stay on the full course. But I think I can't remember what our pace would have had to have been on that bike ride, but it would have had to have beaten any of the top teams. So, you know, we kind of quickly realized that wasn't going to be the case, but that the bike ride for our second last bike leg was beautiful. And now we're on mainland for the first time. So it was a little bit different, you know, we're kind of higher elevation. You know, we had a couple of huge gravel climbs, a couple bike whacks that we probably chose wrongly. But it might've saved us some time, but definitely I had a couple of, manic tantrums out there as I was pushing my bike saying, no, I thought there wasn't supposed to be any bike whacks in this. That was our decision. So I can't blame the race directors on that.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, we had a chance to do a couple awesome descents, you know, on these gravels. And I think the one thing that I kept thinking about these Croatian towns, some of them, you know, were fairly vibrant, you know, little villages. Other of them were essentially ghost towns, but there were rock walls for everywhere, just rock walls and weird bathtubs. Like, I mean, it was just abandoned bathtubs in the middle of nowhere. And I'm sure it's just, you know, something left over from, you know, I don't know how long.
Who knows? Yeah.
But yeah, that was kind of cool. And we also did eat more probably on this race, fresh food than we've ever. We always seem to find a place to order pizza. So, you know, just when we were starting to go down here, we need like 15 minutes for a transition. Hey, there's a pizza place. So that was kind of nice too.
So is it like New York pizza, Chicago pizza?
I would say, I mean, a lot of it was more kind of like that thin crust. To be completely honest, I can't even remember. It tasted great. I mean, anything that's not a, you know, a Kind bar, or Cliff bar, or scratch chews while I'm on the race course is great.
Yeah.
Although I will say, you know, towards the end, we had our last trek, and that was probably the highlight for me. We had this one pretty epic climb up to, I can't remember, I don't know if it was like 11 or 1200 meters, but the way that we climbed it is up through a canyon, and there's all these like big boulders and, I mean, rock walls on either side, and we're trying to find a checkpoint, and I don't know how many hundreds of meters we're already up, but kind of come to this like wall, and we thought, well, that must have taken a wrong turn. And then all of a sudden we see an arrow pointing up, as in you got to climb like on these little old pieces of rebar. And that's when it got really interesting. And for me, it was a nice distraction. It wasn't just another mountain climb on tired feet. It was, you know, kind of hopping around from boulder to boulder and, you know, climbing up some ropes that had been put in years ago. So that was definitely a cool way for us to kind of send up. And then we had a big descent. But what we didn't realize until we got into the last transition is that the temperature was -2. Up in the mountains. Now that's going from plus 30 earlier in the day to -2. Wow. I mean, that's a huge difference. So when we got into this warm transition, they had vegetarian goulash and sausage, fresh food. Sounded awesome. All I'll say was, I don't know if that's the best racing food, because hours later, we were regretting that.
Had some issues, let's say.
Yeah, it's a couple of us may have. So we don't need to explain anymore about that. But definitely not one of my race foods I would recommend.
Yeah. So, well, you're talking about pizza. Here's a general question. What's the best meal you've ever had adventure racing?
Oh, I mean, there's nothing better than a surprise burger. I mean, you know, a couple of races I've done that. I mean, I know Untamed's done that before. Expedition Canada did that last year. Natalie, the race director, had burgers for us at one leg. I think anything that's a surprise is good. I mean, everything and anything that you don't have in your backpack seems to taste delicious. But pizza's right up there too. We did find a little place. The guys had scrambled eggs with like ham and asparagus, you know, looked delicious. I think it's just more, you know, surprises and anything that you're just not eating 24/7 to start with.
Yeah. I know, you know, actually Chris Radcliffe and I at Shenandoah, whenever last time, we're driving around and shooting, and we pull into this little scruzzy gas station, and they got like gas station pizza. Okay. Top five pizza I've ever had in my life.
Really? That's it? Yeah. You just need to know.
You never would have guessed it, but hey, it was. And I don't know if somebody just took a frozen one and how they cooked it, but I still remember it to this day.
Yeah. Yeah. We were in, when we were in Norway a couple years ago, and we were coming off of this, and I guess in the middle of this like monster trek, and we descended, and it was just this, you know, kind of cool little waterfall. And they had this almost like a pancake hut. And I remember getting either pancakes or crepes in there, and they were delicious. And once again, it was just that kind of unexpected treat in the middle of it.
Yeah.
So
okay. That's always the bonus. So why do you unretire?
I kind of joked about retiring. I think, you know what it was? It was the length of the Nordic Islands. I mean, it was still the most beautiful race, you know, that I've done. I mean, being up in those mountains and the waterfalls and all that, I think it was just the recovery time. And at that time, you know, I didn't know that I was going to have a 2.5-year-old at home. So I probably should have stayed retired for that reason. But I think it's funny. I mean, there's times even on this race where I was questioning, you know, and I sometimes wonder if I'm the only one that's out there doing it. It's kind of questioning my sanity, thinking like, you know, what is it? Like, this isn't a fun section, you know, and I could be at home with my family, and, you know, I should be at home with my family. And, you know, I've got other things that are more important than what I'm doing. And, you know, they just kind of, it's not a, like physically you're fine, but mentally you're kind of going through that. And, you know, it wasn't until after the race where, you know, Julie and Harper and Chad kind of laughed and said, oh, we did that many times as well. Like, that's not just you, Chris. And okay, well, that's good to hear. But it's hard to explain to someone, you know, who hasn't been involved with it. Like, I want to be able to tell Emily, you know, my 2.5-year-old years later, like, you know, when she can understand like why I would do that. And I think it's just this kind of sense of accomplishment and kind of going back to what we talked about before about, you know, the kind of need for the distraction, you know, especially given what's going on in the world and just kind of removing yourself from it. I mean, I'm definitely not, you know, a tough guy. You know, I can handle some things, but I'm also, you know, pretty dramatic about things. But the fact that, you know, I can kind of go out and complete these things, you know, it definitely, I think it makes me a better person, makes me a better dad, you know, hopefully a better, you know, friend, you know, son, everything like that. So for me, it's the reason I do them is because it just, I think it makes me a better person. Just kind of appreciating that some of the smaller things in life and hopefully at times not getting caught up on the stuff that I just really can't control, you know, especially over the last couple of years, you know, with everything that's happened. I mean, I think a lot of people appreciate, you know, just being able to go and travel and you know, and spend the time with the people that you want to spend time with. Yeah. So I don't know. It's maybe that's kind of a corny way to answer it, but I've spent a lot of time wondering why I do these things, and that's kind of what I come up with.
Yeah. Well, it does, because I mean, I see that from a lot of adventure racers, there's a lot of giving. And I think the actual racing is refills your giving space. It's like kind of the one time where you get to be, it's me. So
it's my selfish time.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with that. Everybody should have a little. So.
Yeah, that's definitely how I've been looking at it. It's like, and you know, thank goodness, you know, my partner Alicia and, you know, and everyone around me is pretty, you know, they're happy that I'm doing this. At least they tell me that until they get worried when I'm on race course and maybe we're not moving as fast as we should be.
Or maybe they just don't want to see you if you can't do it.
For sure.
So my favorite part up here is like, so what's coming up next for you kind of in the near future? Any plans?
Well, I mean, actually, you know what, this is probably the first time in a little while that I really don't have anything, you know. Usually my races seem to be kind of later in the year, so I'm kind of looking forward to just, you know, spending some time, you know, with the family, doing some kind of, you know, longer fun adventures, you know, maybe on the gravel bike and, you know, carrying a little bit less weight, you know, maybe trying to get the 2.5-year-old more interested in, you know, outdoor things. I love taking her on hikes and that. And yeah, and then kind of later this summer, we always like Bob Miller's 24-hour wilderness traverse. Unfortunately, the local scene for adventure racing is kind of depleted over the last couple of years. So, you know, I've always kind of got in the back of my mind that maybe I'd like to start something up, you know, to at least, you know, provide, you know, you know, another option, you know, for local Ontario Canadian racers. I mean, like I said, we really don't have a lot of options. So part of me thinks maybe I want to, you know, throw my hat in there and, you know, obviously I'm not trying to make a living off of it, but just to try to, you know, offer something, you know, so maybe I'll get into that and maybe I'll give Randy, you know, a call up and see if, you know, you feel like traveling north across the border. I know you were in Gaspésie a couple of years ago, right?
One of the best times I ever had. So I love that race.
That's great. But then, you know, for 2023, I mean, it's funny. I think at one point in the race, I was like, yeah, no, I don't need any more. But I'm already wondering, you know, what the 2023 calendar. We did say that one area that I'd love to race at, Dave Hitchin and his son and a number of teammates have raced in Africa a number of times. And that's kind of moved up to the top of my list, probably past God's Zone after the 155-kilometer trek that they did.
Yeah.
So that or maybe, you know, South America, something like that.
Well, I don't know if I've ever heard anything bad about any of the South African races. So I think that's probably a good one to be at the top of the list. So
yeah, no, I've heard unbelievable things about the organization and the race directors and, you know, the course they put on. So, you know, what better way to kind of see that part of the world and maybe spend, you know, a little extra time there as well. Maybe Iron Maiden will be in town when we're there.
That would be pretty. Yeah, you're gonna start picking your adventure races based on the Iron Maiden tour.
I did get a chuckle. One of the volunteers who was kind of giving us some guidance about places to see in Zagreb, I mentioned that we ended up going to see Iron Maiden, and his I have to read it. It's pretty funny. His response was, and where was it? He says, "Oh, you lucky bastard. I couldn't get any tickets, even though I've put my kidney on the market. Anyways, I'm glad you had fun and hope I catch you for a cold one at the next year's adventure race in Croatia."
Very cool. Very cool. So, all right. Well, I'm going to let you go. We're probably getting late there.
Yeah, late enough. That's okay. Yeah. I still got you to finish. So, yeah. Thanks. Okay. Thanks, Randy. Appreciate the time.
Well, sorry thank for my you rambling. For catching us up on sounds like a really cool race.
I think I said it on Facebook, but I definitely highly recommend the adventure racing Croatia. You know, I'm sure Igor and Anna, you know, they're probably enjoying a little bit of rest right now after you know, a hard couple of weeks and, you know, months of planning. I mean, this has been, you know, a number of years in the works, but I think the one thing I would say is they did a great job of making sure that everyone had a chance to see as much of the course as possible. So, you know, what more could you ask for if you're going all the way over there for an adventure race and, you know, you're not going to podium. So,
Sounds great. So
thanks, Randy. Right. Appreciate it. Yeah.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
terror in my heart. But I've been too many miles down this road. Yeah, you're the first one ever show me respect. Been a history of abuse and neglect. Sad to think of misery. Only friend I have left. But I've traveled too many miles down this road.
Too many miles.